Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is September 27th, 2015, and this is episode 93, Do the Mario. Welcome, once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're wrapping up our Mario Month celebration of 30 years of Mario by taking a look at the cultural impact that both Mario the character and Mario the game series have had, both in the world of games and beyond. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits for you. Slaggy, do you want to get us kicked off?
Yeah, to start out, we have news from Arc System Works that they will be bringing Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator to consoles. It will be getting a spring 2016 release in Japan for PS4 and PS3. Yay!
Excellent!
Kermit.gif.
That's awesome. To commemorate the announcement of the console release of Revelator, as well as celebrating the total Japanese sales figures of Xrd Sign topping 100,000 units, in Japan there are free character color DLCs available that give everyone like a glowing blue Tron kind of look.
Hey.
I think it is super, super cool looking. Slaggy, what do you think of that?
Yeah, it looks super, super, like, retro, future, cool.
Awesome, I totally agree. We also have word here that the Hatsune Miku DLC for Persona 4 Dancing All Night will be coming to North America on October 20th. The pack is going to cost $4.99, and it will be available under the free dance tracks. We also have here an announcement from Capcom that...
Yes, heard around the world.
Right? A fan-favorite character from Street Fighter Alpha 3, Karen Kanzuki, is going to be a playable character in Street Fighter V. We have a reveal trailer. We'll link you to it over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And she just looks fantastic. Once again, you know, things are slightly tongue-in-cheek in Street Fighter V. I think this is a great angle for the series, and I'm just getting increasingly hyped for this game.
So we found out, possibly unfortunately, that the new second Densetsu game is going to be a remake of the original. It will be for...
Again?
It'll be for Vita and smartphone. It's a 3D remake of, you know, what we know over here as Final Fantasy Adventure. And I think in Europe it even had a different title, so, you know, over in America we know it as Final Fantasy Adventure. But it will utilize the Ring Command menu that was used in Secret of Mana, so...
And, you know, something exciting to me, it uses the graphical style of Rise of Mana, but it looks to, as far as, like, the gameplay perspective, it looks to be taking its cues from Secret of Mana. And it's been really cool, you know, Square Enix, when talking about this, has basically, you know, said that they're trying to make this game this way so that they can maybe remake all of the Seiken Densetsu games if this does well.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
And, you know, with all of the Seiken Densetsu crossovers and stuff that Rise of Mana has had, a lot of these assets are already created. So, really, we just need this game to do well.
Well, mobile title, something.
It's going to be releasing in Japan for PlayStation Vita, Android, and iPhone this winter. Hopefully, it does super well. They are going to be pricing even the Vita version at, like, $9.99 to $14.99.
Oh, that's good.
They've specifically said, you know, they are looking at this as a budget title, but they want it to be, like, an evergreen sort of little, like, side business, basically.
I
think this is a great angle for Square Enix. I'm very optimistic. I really hope they bring it over here, and, you know, I hope it does well. We also have word here that the upcoming Mobile Suit Gundam Extreme Versus Force for PlayStation Vita is going to have a full English localized version of the game released. It may not be released in North America, but this will be the Asian version of the game. And, you know, we've talked a little bit here on the show about Asian versions of games. I know Sword Art Online had a really poorly English translated version released in Asia. But this, it appears that they're sort of doubling down and doing like a full-on localization for this game, maybe to target savvy importers, which, you know, a lot of us importers for a long time have said, you know, we're willing to import if you just have a language we speak on your disc or whatever. So it'll be interesting to see if people really pick up what they're putting down here.
Mm-hmm. In some sad news, Persona 5 has been delayed to summer 2016 in Japan. I mean, I guess it's good news because it means that the game's going to be even better than it would have been if they tried to release it this winter. We don't have any news about the American release, aside from it's going to be 2016. So hopefully still a simultaneous launch, but we will remain to see that.
In other highly unexpected and super noteworthy delays, we have word here coming from Platinum Games and Nintendo that the upcoming Wii U title Star Fox Zero will no longer be a winter 2015 release, but will instead be releasing in spring 2016. They said pretty explicitly that the reason behind this delay is that they wish to further improve the game's quality. So, while we should be sad, we should also be happy that we're going to be getting a superior product next year.
You know, I felt like what I saw could have used a little polish, so I'm thinking that might be for the best.
I know a lot of the graphics whores were super butthurt that the game wasn't as pretty as they wanted it to be.
It wasn't even for me graphically. It just something seemed a little sparse. I don't know.
Either way, I'm eager to see what comes out of this. And
what does that leave for our Wii U winter release, though? Just Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival?
Well, there's also the Wii U Mario Tennis Smash game.
Oh, that's right.
So, it'll be a little sparse, but, you know, there will be something. I'm hoping they pull some kind of rabbit out of their hat and have, like, new Mario Kart and Smash DLC or something. That would get me through the winter.
Yeah.
New content for Splatoon, Mario Maker, Kart, and Smash. I'd be in.
Yeah.
We also have word here that Dark Souls 3 will be releasing in April in North America and Europe. You may recall we had discussed the late March Japanese release date for this game, and unsurprisingly, it will be following in the rest of the world a few weeks later.
We have some new characters that have been announced that are coming to Podcast Crosszone. Project Crosszone. Those will be Chrome and Lucina from Fire Emblem Awakening, Cosmos from Xenosaga, and Fiora from Xenoblade. And those will each be pair units. So Chrome and Lucina and Cosmos and Fiora will be each pair units.
That is so awesome. I would, however, like to point out, do not think too hard about Fiora's character design if you've never played Xenoblade Chronicles and you plan to do so. That's all I'm saying. We also, of course, have word here that Project Crosszone 2 is going to have Shenmue's Rio, as well as Tales of Vesperia's Estelle, both as single unit characters in the new game.
Wow.
And all of this will be happily inside your 3DS in North America on February 16th, 2016. Which brings us to our release dates. We have Dragon Quest VII launching on smartphone in Japan on September 17th. We have Mighty No. 9 hitting North America February 9th.
Maybe.
And Europe February 12th. And I appreciate your pessimism, but, you know, games get delayed sometimes. It doesn't mean this one isn't coming out.
Yes, Life is Strange.
Yeah, in fact, Life is Strange Episode 5, the final episode, will be hitting October 20th. Hyrule Warriors Legends will be releasing in Japan on January 21st. Dragon Quest Builders will be releasing in Japan on January 28th. And last but certainly not least, Star Ocean Integrity and Faithlessness will be releasing in Japan on February 25th.
All right, then.
Slaggy, you got anything to say about any of that?
No, just that, oh my god, we got some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god. News.
So, this was a week full of super exciting, super big news. This is the piece of news that I decided to highlight as the marquee news because it is what is most exciting to me. Square Enix has announced a new Kingdom Hearts Remix title for PlayStation 4 at the annual Sony Computer Entertainment Japan Asia press conference today. Or, today, a few weeks ago. This is Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue. The game will consist of a Dream Drop Distance HD remake, as well as a series of HD movies based around the Kingdom Hearts Key mobile series. This is called Kingdom Hearts Key Back Cover, as well as, and this is what is super, super, super exciting, Kingdom Hearts 0.2 Birth by Sleep, a Fragmentary Passage.
What?
And what that basically is the project that was previously announced as Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep Volume 2 being made finally after years and years of it, you know, basically being a dead project. And it's being made using the Kingdom Hearts 3 engine on Unreal 4.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of people are comparing 0.2 Birth by Sleep as almost like a Metal Gear... Well, yeah, prologue. Like, you know, like...
Final chapter prologue.
Like Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes for Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, wow.
This is something I'm super excited about. It's apparently going to be about one world's worth of content. So, you know, an hour or two of gameplay. Obviously, super excited to see all of the cool gameplay stuff and graphics stuff that the Kingdom Hearts 3 engine is bringing with it. This is, to me, just such huge, huge news for Kingdom Hearts fans. I am absolutely stoked. I cannot wait to play it. Slaggy, do you want to take this other piece of monumental news?
Yeah, finally coming to the PlayStation Store is Mega Man Legends. So, Capcom has announced that they will be bringing the classic action RPG to PlayStation stores, and that's actually coming on September 29th. So probably awesome. By the time you listen to this, and it'll only be $9.99, which is huge news because, I mean, this is a game that was going for easily, what, $60, $70, $80, $90,
$100? Yeah, I've seen it at all of those price points, depending on the condition of the game. So to be getting it for $10, while it is a little more expensive than a lot of PSN PlayStation 1 releases, we do know for a fact that this game was tied up in some kind of licensing issues. Probably Capcom had to, you know, go back and sign new contracts to get this game out. Capcom over at Capcom Unity, there's been some discussion on how they've basically been working to get this out for the last 5 years.
Wow.
It's finally come to fruition, and they hope people don't shun it for being a couple dollars more than the average PS1 Classic release.
Well, I think it's just a good sign for Capcom maybe realizing that they have not been using Mega Man the way they should, and, you know,
well, there's
maybe
been
starting to turn it around.
There's been a lot of talk on the internet about exactly that, basically. Just that, you know, Capcom of, you know, the sort of Japanese titans, Namco Bandai, Capcom, Konami. Capcom is the one that is really focusing on...
Konami?
Capcom is the one that's really focusing on using their back catalog, reviving their classic IP. And, you know, after they opened that studio using all of their Monster Hunter money, it was supposed to make mobile games and it basically did awful. I think Capcom gets it. You know, Capcom has been a joke to gamers for a couple of years now, and I think they're finally figuring out how they can leverage their incredible IP portfolio to you know, really bring themselves back. And this, to me, is a great step. And I really hope the marketplace supports Mega Man Legends on PSN. I really do.
Yeah.
We also have word here that Tatsumi Kimishima has been announced as Nintendo's new interim president. You know, this is due to the fact that a few months ago, Satoru Iwata-san passed away. Obviously, you know, may he rest in peace. But for the next year, at least... Kimishima will be sitting in the presidential seat, making decisions and calling the shots. At the same time as this, Nintendo has also announced that they are continuing with the corporate restructure and large-scale revision of organization that they had began initiating before Iwata-san had passed. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of moving and shaking behind the scenes at Nintendo for the next year or so. And, you know, this is probably a good thing for the future. I think we all want to see Nintendo do well. And, you know, I think that a little bit of shake-up and, you know, bringing some freshness to proceedings could be very useful.
Indeed. I'm hoping for good things. We got some news about a Persona 5 anime coming. It was announced at the Persona Special Stage at Tokyo Game Show. We don't know quite yet if it's going to just be like a short or an actual anime series. It was announced as a special program, so we're thinking maybe it's just like a special, like a TV movie or something. But we will find out. And we also got a little news in this Silicon Era story that there's going to be a Persona Festival to celebrate 20 years of Persona. So that's fun.
Yeah, that's super exciting. If we hadn't already done Persona Buoy, that'd be the time.
Right?
Just think, return to Persona Buoy.
Well, maybe if Persona 5's out by then.
Ah! We also have word here that Star Ocean Second Evolution, which was an enhanced port of Star Ocean Second Story for PSP, will be getting a PlayStation Vita release as well as a PlayStation 4 release. You know, Square Enix has very specifically said the PlayStation 4 version isn't a remake, it's just gonna be a port.
Well, hopefully with a little bit of a 1080p polish or whatever.
And, you know, Shuichi Kobayashi has said, you know, that while they don't have a release window announced, we should expect this to be coming out soon. This to me is really exciting because, and I don't know about all of y'all out there, but I miss old style JRPGs. I don't need everything to be a remake. I'm perfectly fine with some pixelized graphics and cute sprites with some rough edges.
That's true, yeah.
And I would love it if we lived in a world where Square Enix could just release Final Fantasy VI with its original sprites rather than some awful bullshit like those iOS ports have.
Yeah.
Like, if that's my option, don't remake anything. Just use the original art assets, please. We also have word here that Hatsune Miku Project Diva X, which is the Hatsune Miku arcade game, will be getting a PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita port in Japan later this year. Early next year. This will be releasing on PlayStation Vita in March and in the fall for PlayStation 4. You may recall, of course, that the last version of Project Diva released simultaneously on Vita and PlayStation 4 for the first time in the series, and the sales numbers of the PlayStation Vita version were smaller than they had previously been. It's not hard to imagine that this is a move made to bolster sales of the Vita version, and, you know, I really can't blame them for it. Either way, hopefully this, as with many of the other Project Diva games, will come to North America at some point.
Indeed. Sony had some bombshells that they dropped at their SCEJA press conference 2015 in the form of Gravity Rush Remastered and Gravity Rush 2, both for PS4. Gravity Rush Remastered is going to be a remastered version of the underappreciated Vita gem. I feel it was underappreciated. And it's going to come in a collector's edition with a Cat Figma, at least in Japan.
Yes! That's on
February 10th. And in North America, we get it on February 9th. Europe, February 10th. And it's going to include all of the DLC that was part of the Vita. And then the sequel, Gravity Rush 2, is a PS4 exclusive sometime next year.
And there is a trailer, and it looks beautiful.
And the team over at Sony working on Gravity Rush 2 said, you know, once you see it in action, you'll understand why it had to be a PS4 title and not a Vita title.
Oh, snap, son.
Yeah, like, Gravity Rush was one of the good reasons to get a Vita back when it was like a, you know, $400 handheld.
We also have word here that Danganronpa will be getting a third installment to the mainline series. Spike Chunsoft announced Danganronpa V3 for PlayStation Vita and PlayStation 4.
Oh.
This was during the Sony Computer Entertainment Japan Asia Press Conference 2015. We don't know a whole lot about the game yet, but supposedly we will be hearing more in the near future.
VanillaWare has a new mecha game called 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim. All we know right now is that it's for PS4 and Vita, and we'll be looking forward to more details, so please look forward to that.
You may recall this is the game that we had spoken briefly about last episode of Game Buoy. This is the game that had the artwork that, you know, nobody had really, was it really able to identify from VanillaWare's New Year's greeting. So, yeah, it is a real game, and it is coming. We also hear, finally, after months and months of teases of an upcoming Saga series project, have an official announcement for Saga Scarlet Grace. This is going to be a PS Vita game releasing in Japan in 2016.
Nice.
We also have word that Sega will be releasing for the PlayStation 4 Yakuza Kiwami. This is an quote-unquote ultimate remake of the first Yakuza game for PlayStation 4.
Oh, wow.
Alongside that announcement, we got the announcement of what will be Yakuza 6. This is going to be scheduled for release in Japan in fall 2016.
Wow. Bloodborne is getting a full-scale expansion called Bloodborne the Old Hunters. It's going to be coming out on November 24th, so not far off. It's going to be set in a nightmare world where hunters from the past find themselves trapped forever.
You can run, but you can't hide, bitch. I'm Scary Terry.
It will have new stages, rewards, and beasts, and gear, and weapons, and magic. And you can get it with the
We don't even need to talk about all that. It's a Bloodborne expansion. Literally everyone listening to this is gonna buy it.
I don't even have the first Bloodborne.
Are you serious?
You know that I'm not good at those types of games.
We also have word here of an upcoming new One Piece game. Bandai Namco revealed One Piece Burning Blood for the PlayStation Vita and PlayStation 4. The game is going to focus more specifically on, like, battles and, like, characters using their special devil fruit powers than previous One Piece games have.
That's exciting for you.
Yeah, this is super exciting. I love One Piece. Earlier this week, I finally got around to buying One Piece Pirate Warriors 3,
so I'm
super stoked for that. I haven't played it yet, so I can't really talk about it, but either
Did
way,
you,
more One
well,
Piece
you know,
is always
you can
good.
Just, you can turn the music off on it and listen to Avril Lavigne's cover of How You Remind Me for the One Piece, was One Piece Z movie or something?
And last, but certainly not least, we have word from SNK Playmore that King of Fighters 14 is in the works and will be releasing in 2016 for PlayStation 4.
Well, okay.
Somewhat interestingly, this is going to be following Street Fighter 4 and Street Fighter 5 in terms of being a 2D fighting or a 2.5D fighting game. So it is going to be fully polygonal graphics.
Mm.
Unfortunately, in the trailer here, there was some cause for concern. Things didn't look nearly as tight as they could, but hopefully it's just, you know, an early version of the game. We have seen KOF and, you know, some of the other SNK fighting games dabble in 3D before. Some of those games have turned out to be pretty all right. Fingers crossed, hopefully this one's going to work out as well.
Yeah.
Saiki, do you have anything else to say about any of these news stories?
No, but we do unfortunately have some...
Doom and gloom.
Well, this is really, really difficult for me to talk about, so... just forgive me if I get a little emotional here. Square Enix has announced that they will be shutting down Final Fantasy VII G-Bike in Japan.
Get over it.
This was, of course, this is kind of notable because it only launched last year in Japan in October. They had talked about, you know, that they were going to be bringing it to the West, but that's not going to happen, I mean, as far as I can tell, because as of December 15th of this year, you will not be able to play it.
Yeah, and you know, the official word here is that Square Enix... you know, we're trying to find a way to make the game work. They just felt like it really wasn't working. It wasn't clicking for people. And that ultimately it made the most sense to just shut the game down and, you know, focus their resources to other places. That's always a tough choice to make, but I have to be honest, I'm actually kind of proud of Square Enix. I feel like they've been making a lot of good business choices lately. Wow, it felt weird to say that. And, you know, I would rather see them put something like this down if it wasn't working rather than funnel years and years and years of resources into a dog that just ain't gonna hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of looking in the direction of Versus 13 right now, but... Either way, it's still sad to hear. Hopefully none of our listeners really, really loved this game. We also...
And if, you know, if they did, they can just go pick up their copy of Final Fantasy VII and play
G-Bike, there. Yeah. We also have word here that Spike Chunsoft is going to be ending the Danganronpa mobile social game. This, of course, is Danganronpa Unlimited Battle. It is currently available for iPhone in Japan, and it's a 3D action title with original scenarios based around your favorite characters from the series. Microtransactions for the game will stop being sold in early October, and players will get to play until November 13th, after which point the game will cease to exist.
Yeah, it seems like kind of a trend, some of these mobile games. So it's interesting, you know, how we were, like, mobile social games. Are we seeing kind of the slowdown of the mobile social overload?
You know, I think we are, and I, you know, I'm just hoping
it's
that...
It's funny that Nintendo is now stepping into the mobile sphere.
But that might be the time, you know, now that the Wii and the chaff
right.
have been separated, Nintendo coming in strong could be a good thing.
Yeah.
I feel like people are starting to recognize the value of quality over quantity, and that's an arena in which Nintendo can succeed. Unless
Indeed.
We have anything else, though, we have some controversial stuff here.
Controversial.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
First up, we have word here that Capcom is discontinuing their iOS release of Monster Hunter Freedom Unite. In fact, the Monster Hunter Freedom Unite game does not work with iOS 9 on the iPhone, and they have no plans to ever update the application. So effectively, if you are playing Monster Hunter Freedom Unite, you have an iPhone, you're loving it, you want to update to iOS 9, you're pretty much going to have to pick which you love more.
Sorry, can't get that new 6S that you wanted.
All right. Interestingly, you know, Freedom Unite has only been on the App Store since July of 2014. So, you know, again, we're seeing where a game that is not that old is getting shoved off. By all accounts, everyone I know who's played this version of this game, mostly using third-party controller, peripherals, have had good experiences with the game itself. So it sucks to hear this. I think Capcom's a little bit in the wrong here. But yeah, how much do you want to bet next we're going to see a version of Monster Hunter 4 on iOS?
What was it that you were saying about Capcom doing good things with their IP lately?
Well, hey, you know, maybe they're clearing the stage for the next version of Monster Hunter. I don't know. We also have word here that the upcoming PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 versions of Call of Duty Black Ops 3 will not have single-player modes. These games will basically be pared-down versions of Black Ops 3 featuring multiplayer and zombies game modes only. There will be no campaign to speak of, and there will be no other special mode for single-player gamers.
Oh, well, that's okay, because it'll probably be, like, what, a $19, maybe $29 at the most.
Black Ops 3 will be available at the standard suggested retail price of $49.99. And include a bonus download of the original Call of Duty Black Ops. You know, just in case you do need some single player, and on the off chance you haven't played it already.
Yeah, I'm kind of feeling like anyone who is playing Blops 3 is already someone who's buying all these Call of Duty titles.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I think this is absolute shit. It's
like a waste of their money and resources. Why not just make Blops 3? Because the thing is that they know that people buy consoles for Call of Duty. So, I mean,
yeah, there is numbers to support that. So, very, very questionable business choice. This isn't the kind of game series we typically talk about here, but I really felt it was worthwhile just to point out, like, this is a thing that's happening, it's absolute shit, and it really sucks. It really sucks. Hopefully none of our listeners are negatively impacted, but if you are, try Destiny?
And my thing is that it's getting towards the end of 2015. It's okay to stop releasing last-gen titles, people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let them rest.
I wish people could really take that to heart, honestly. Like, I feel you. You know, you want to support your legacy customers. I know we have some listeners who are still on last gen. And, you know, obviously, I think y'all are cool. I certainly don't blame anyone who doesn't want to move forward or buy a new box. But, you know, those last gen consoles came out nearly 10 years ago now.
Yep.
I at some point, you need to let them go, especially on the developer end.
You cut me off before I can make a Frozen joke.
Let it go. Let it go.
In another news that's so controversial, do you think it would be better if Kristen Chenoweth had been the voice of Princess Elsa?
So let's get on to this discussion. You know, Mario obviously has, you know, he's been a pop culture icon for forever.
Pretty much, like, since he burst onto the scene going, ho-hoo!
Well, he didn't burst onto the scene going, ho-hoo! But, you know, he's obviously starred in numerous television shows, comic books. There was the feature film. He appears on T-shirts, magazines. He's been in television commercials. Obviously, you have, like, launch boxes.
It's a television commercial.
Yes, cereal, board games, so many plush
toys.
There is the 60-minute anime that we'll probably talk about in just a minute. The animated series, you know, Super Show and Mario World and all of that. Mario is gigantic. He has been in basically every form of pop culture media that you could imagine, like this side of Bart Simpson, really. That's the level of of penetration and impact that Mario as a character has made.
Yeah, I mean, you saw a little bit of that with the early arcade days with, like, you know, the Pac-Man TV show, the Donkey Kong cartoons, which were part of, like, the, what, CBS Saturday Morning Arcade Action Hour or whatever. But, I mean, really, like, I from my childhood memories, this was, like, really the first video game franchise to just explode into, like, multimedia.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he's had staying power beyond that. You know, his contemporaries in this realm of characters who have had this kind of media attention, you have
Mickey Mouse.
Like Well, hold on. I'm talking about other video game characters. You have characters like Sonic the Hedgehog had, you know, TV series, anime series, theatrical anime movie in Japan. Sonic was nearly up there with him, with Mario.
And then, how the mighty have fallen.
Ah, right. But that really shows, you know, it's a character can be huge, can be ginormous, can have all of the market penetration in the world.
Right.
And for most characters and most IPs, it's an ephemeral, fleeting thing.
Yeah, the reason why I brought up Mickey Mouse is that there's a famous, I don't know like who it's attributed to, but I always see the quote floating around that, at one point, Mario was more recognized than Mickey Mouse, so...
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's really what I wanted to highlight, and I guess you just jumped ahead, I wanted to lay a little foundation, is that Mario is on the level of a Mickey Mouse kind of pop culture.
Yeah, like people will see Mario, they're like, oh, it's Super Mario.
Yeah, people who have never played a video game in their life still know Mario. And that's, you know, it's a big deal. It's not like a situation like Q-Bert. Or...
Well, that little fucker.
Well, no, but, you know, Q-Bert had his moment of fame. There was a time that, you know, Q-Bert was
a part of pop culture.
He
had a cartoon on that CBS Saturday morning block.
Well, and that's exactly my point. You know, there have been
But he's a little fucker. He's got a foul mouth.
You know, Street Fighter has had TV shows and movies and cartoons and anime. And, you know, certainly the Street Fighter brand is coming back up. But for, you know, a solid almost decade, I would say, Street Fighter was basically a non-existent in the greater pop cultural sphere. You have characters like Mega Man, who, again, you know, cartoons, comic books, anime, toys and figures and things, but still did not penetrate that top tier of longevity and recognizability that Mario has attained. Mario is in so many ways the face of gaming to an older generation. And it's just really interesting to think about. You know, you have all of these tons of sports players, for example, named Mario, whom basically in sports press and sports television constantly get the nickname Super Mario. Obviously, you know, Mario Lemieux, is that how you say his name? I've always been tricky on
that. I believe that's
correct,
yes.
You know, I've heard him called Super Mario so many times in my damn life.
Do you think that Chef Mario Batali has been called Super Mario?
I would be shocked if he hadn't, truly. You know, you have Mario being recognized by the Guinness Book of World Records, best-selling game series of all time, first movie based on an existing video game, most prolific video game character, since, you know, Mario has appeared in 116 distinct titles. It's just huge. It's fascinating.
And then
to me.
Alone, you know, with the advent of the internet, just all of the YouTube content and such that's out there, and, like, you know, fan art and all of that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Mario is massive. We talked a little bit about this in our earlier episodes of Mario Month, but, you know, we've had even third parties clamoring. Philips, certainly, you know, the learning company, all of these people, like, fighting to make Mario games because they just recognize the value of this IP and the recognizability of this IP is so strong.
And, you know, this kind of the story of Mario's peak market penetration, which... I mean, I would say he still has a very high market penetration, but, you know, definitely the early 90s, there were a lot of, you know, there was a lot of Mario multimedia out there. And, you know, Nintendo kind of learned some lessons about applying the Nintendo seal of quality. You know, we talked a little bit
you
about
and
the
that
Philips
damn
game.
Nintendo seal of quality.
No, but I mean, when we talk about the film, you know, I specifically want to make reference to, you know, their kind of the backlash from Nintendo themselves.
Well, so there are like six Mario sort of things I want to talk about here.
Can we just really quickly talk about Nintendo cereal system?
Okay, what do you have to say about Nintendo? It's a cereal now.
Mostly that I remember the commercials more than the cereal itself.
That's fair. Did you ever have it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was
the two different bags in the box?
I was never a huge cereal kid, though, so...
You are crazy.
I kind of remember it being, like, Lucky Charms, you know?
Oh, bitch. Yeah, that is spoken like someone who is not a connoisseur of breakfast cereals.
Okay, well, can you please describe Nintendo serial system for
those. Well, the thing is, and this is the only time you will ever hear me say this, I preferred Zelda to Mario.
Why? Was there like a significant difference?
Yes! The whole texture of the cereal was different.
Was it like a Chex? Like, please describe this to me.
No, this isn't worth talking about anymore. This isn't worth talking about anymore. Either way, there were Nintendo was so big that there was Nintendo cereal. That's the point here. You and I could talk about the mouth feel of cereal off the air.
Okay, so why don't we start talking about Nintendo Comic System? I remember you've always said that you were a big fan of the Nintendo Comic System, like contemporaneously, and you even have, like, the hardcover compilation that came out a couple years back.
Heck yeah. I loved these comics. They were published by Valiant in, like, 1990 and 1991.
Okay, you say you loved them, but were they good or were they pretty cheeseball?
Well, so the thing is, you know, there were a couple of different games covered in Nintendo Comics System. You had some stuff like Mario, you had Zelda, but you also had, like, Captain N stories. There was like Metroid stuff and Punch Out stuff. It was pretty cool, honestly. And the thing I remember is that the Legend of Zelda stories were so much better than the Legend of Zelda cartoon.
Did they still say, "Excuse me, princess"?
Well, so it was done in that style, but the stories themselves were sometimes darker. Like, there was one particular, it was almost like a body horror story where Link began to turn into Ganon. He started, like, growing, like, pig snouts and stuff because he was making poor choices.
Oh, my God.
And it was, like, actually, like, this is kind of edgy. As far as the Mario stuff goes, it was done in more of, like, an over-the-top cartoonish sort of fashion. The stories, though, again, it was like they took the Mario cartoon and just gave better stories to it, which isn't that surprising. You know, the comics market at the time was largely telling more sophisticated stories than what we were seeing in Saturday morning cartoon shows.
Yeah.
You know, now, of course, the cartoon world in North America has stuff like Steven Universe and Adventure Time. I would argue that that's way more sophisticated than the average comic book.
Right.
But at the time, kids' shows were just nonsense to sell toys, and these comics writers were still trying to tell good stories.
That's good.
And so what you actually ended up with were actually some pretty cool stories based in, you know, these silly universes that were established by the cartoons. And it's, you know, it's something that's definitely worth looking into. I actually, you know, this hardcover Best of Nintendo Comics System book that I have, I just got this off Amazon for like $10. A couple years ago, I bought one for a guy I was trying to court, and I bought one for myself while I was at it, and it made a great gift, and it's been a fun read. It was a fun read. I still have some of my original issues, but they're all in pretty awful condition, so I'm really glad for this collection.
Nice.
Do you have anything to say about any of these comics, Slaggy?
No, just that I remember them being out, but I was never a big comics kid. I kind of grew up in the middle of nowhere and, you know, didn't really, I mean, I would have had to have my mom drive me to a comic shop, and I just didn't have enough friends interested in comics that, like, you know, I was really exposed to it.
But
this isn't Comics Buoy.
I feel you, but I do have to point out my comics that I got from the Nintendo Comic System did not come from a comic book store, even though I did go to comic book stores at that age. I actually used to get these off the rack at 7-Eleven.
Okay, yeah, like my closest 7-Eleven probably was still like a 7 or 8 miles away.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. I lived a few blocks from a Sev. It had like Mortal Kombat arcade machines and like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade machines. Like 7-Eleven was like the cool place to hang out when I was a kid.
Yeah, we've had different childhoods, but anyway.
So I want you to talk about this next one. This is an anime film, Slaggy.
Oh, you mean Super Mario Brothers Pichime Kyushutsu Daisakusen?
Okay, yeah, that's what I mean.
Also known as Super Mario Brothers The Great Mission to Rescue Princess Peach. This was released in 1986, so very shortly after the original Super Mario Brothers. It was a hour-long video release, VHS and Betamax. Never saw a release outside of Japan. And it's notable for being the first movie based on a video game. And the only other one that was like truly the first like film was the live-action Mario. So this was the first animated film movie based on a video game. And I've never actually watched it. You can find subtitled versions on YouTube, and some people have tried to fan dub it. I've just never really had the drive to watch it. But basically, it involves Mario getting sucked into his Famicom, and he and Luigi help Princess Peach basically beat Bowser and stop a wedding from happening between Bowser and Peach. And then, you know, just kind of just doing its best to really adapt the minimal story that was established in the original Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, you know, I have tried to watch it, but unfortunately, I have to be honest, it's not very good. And watching it, it's hard to imagine that it would have been very good even when it came out. We're going to talk in just a minute about Super Mario Brothers Super Show. Probably a lot of you listening to this have some kind of memory of that program. I would say that, like, this anime movie was probably worse than that. You know, I mean, it was cool. It got a little meta with, like, the characters of Mario playing Mario or whatever, and that's cute, but overall, it's just, I would not call it very good.
Yeah.
Unless it gets super good after, you know, 15 minutes in, but I just can't.
Yeah, I tried to watch, like, 5 minutes of it, and I was like, no.
But, you know,
I guess
subs,
credit where it's due, it kind of established that, oh, you know, Mario is in the Mushroom Kingdom, and, you know, for the longest time, kind of helped establish that, you know, oh, Mario and Luigi were from the real world. Now we don't really think about that. You know, there's this whole kind of narrative about, you know, Mario and Luigi being from Brooklyn, yada, yada, yada. And particularly, you know, for us over in, you know, the States, really having that, like, shoved in our face with Super Mario Brothers Super Show.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, it did contribute to the canon meaningfully. It's just kind of a mess. Either way, you know, it's available fan-subbed. You can find it really easily at, you know, whatever site you use for fan-subbed anime, or just, you know, YouTube it. It is available in its entirety, both fan-subbed and fan-dubbed, on YouTube.
Yep.
So I'd like to talk about the Super Mario Brothers Super Show next. And Slaggy, I feel like you'd be a better choice to talk about this. I feel pretty sure you have told me that you've watched this. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I watched it contemporaneously. I tried watching the pilot episode just two weeks or so ago, just kind of refresh my memory. And, you know, usually you can find these cartoons without the live-action wrappers like around them on, like, I think Netflix has had them for a while or things. So you can sometimes find them on DVD and stuff, but yes. So yes, I have seen it.
Yeah. And, you know, I watched this contemporaneously as well. This just seems like the kind of thing that you would be better to talk about than me. So have at it. Tell us about the Super Mario Brothers Super Show.
So, you know, this is just kind of one of those artifacts of late 80s, early 90s television where, you know, I guess, I mean, really, you could credit things like Pee-wee's Playhouse with kind of having, like, cartoons with, like, wraparound live-action segments, like, hosting them and stuff. I mean, I guess, you know, that really probably went back to, like, Captain Kangaroo and that sort of shit, right? But,
I think so.
But, you know, I mean, there was definitely a trend of that in the late 80s, early 90s as well. And so, basically, kind of, it would be, you know, most of us remember probably the Mario cartoons, but they were bookended by live-action segments with Mario and Luigi, who were in their, like, a Brooklyn apartment / office for where they were plumbers. So it was kind of establishing, you know, that they were plumbers in Brooklyn. And basically they would just have, like, silly slapstick sort of things happen with, like, celebrity guest stars. Like, most of them are kind of, like, people, like, I didn't even recognize, but, like, Vanna White was on at one point. A lot of athletes, Magic Johnson, Rowdy Roddy Piper, which, you know, definitely a lot of wrestlers, because Mario was memorably played by Captain Lou Albano, rest in peace. Luigi was played by the actor Danny Wells, not quite as memorable, unfortunately, but, you know. So, you know, and it was silly, it was pretty stupid. Apparently, Elvira appeared in one episode, but you can't find that on DVD.
Yes!
Which is, like, damn. Cyndi Lauper appeared on one episode. So, you know, it got a few people. Eve Plum, a.k.a. Jan Brady. Sure, Jan. And it would just be, like, silly things. Like, the one that I watched, which was the pilot, like, there was some random child star who was, she was like, I need my plumbing fixed because I'm going to a party and I need to, like, take a shower. And so then, like, they were basically like, oh, we could show you all our plumbing abilities. And then, like, they got, like, basically they were, like, trying to fix, like, pipes and stuff and got, like, sewage on her. And then she ended up landing on a cake and she's like, it's okay, I was going to a messy party and now I'm going to win the costume contest. I'm like, really? So, like, it was stupid crap. You know, there was one time Captain Lou Albano appeared as himself, and then Mario was like, oh, I wanted to meet him. So it was like, you know, trying to, like, play with things like that. One time they portrayed Marianne and Luigina, so they, like, were in drag. So, you know, it was just really gimmicky crap. But these were served as... These served as wraparound for the Super Mario Brothers cartoon. And then on Fridays was Legend of Zelda, which everybody on the playground was waiting for Friday. Even though, and we will talk about the Zelda cartoon when we inevitably do a Zelda episode.
Which may never happen.
Oh, please. But the Super Mario Brothers cartoon, at this point, we were based heavily on the original, and then a lot of elements from Super Mario Brothers 2. Really, the only things that kind of made it cute were, like, the scenery and the sound effects were definitely taken from the game. But it was just a bunch of, like, stupid, stupid cartoon shit that, like, was from the, you know, 80s and 90s, because it just was not super high quality. Like, one in the pilot episode, Toad gets captured by a Birdo, and she's like, oh, you're my baby. And Toad's like, I'm not your baby. What's wrong, you broad? Because he's, like, for some reason got, like, this, like, he's got, like, a Brooklyn accent, too, even though he's Toad. So, they were pretty dumb, but to their credit, did have, you know, Mario, Luigi, Toad, and Princess Toadstool, you know, more properly known as Peach. And then there was, King Koopa, a.k.a. Bowser, so, you know, and they were dumb. They, a lot of times, like, tried to be a parody of, like, either movie genres or something in pop culture, so, you know, most famously, I think, one of the worst examples was when they went to the real world and went to a Milli Vanilli concert because Peach was a super big fan of Milli Vanilli. I'm not making that up. So, yeah, it was pretty bad, but, you know, for the time, if you can, like, tolerate the really bad writing and, like, the really stupid jokes and realize that, you know, like Captain Spike said, these are basically designed to sell merchandise. You know, it was, I've seen worse.
And why don't you expand on that to talk about The Adventures of Super Mario Bros. 3?
So The Adventures of Super Mario Bros. 3 came after the airing of Super Mario Bros. Super Show. It did not have any live-action wraparounds, but it aired with Captain N the Game Master, which, you know, if you're not familiar with, it was a dude from Southern California named Kevin who I think he got sucked into his Nintendo, right?
That's my recollection, yes. I tried to watch Captain N a couple years back.
Yeah, Captain N was really bad. We might have to do
mind-numbing.
We might have to do a Captain N micro or something just to talk about the poorly adapted video game adaptations. But Super Mario Bros. 3... I blur a lot of these together. Super Mario Bros. 3 might have been the one that had... I think that was the one that had Milli Vanilli. So, you know, again, really, really bad stuff. Mario Bros. 3 was actually the one that had real-world settings. They one time went to the White House. So I guess in some ways, the original Super Mario Bros. Super Show actually was a little more authentic. This one was just really bad. The Koopalings appeared, but they all had different names than in the show. Like, you know, Iggy and Lemmy were Hip and Hop. So it was like just...
Oh, hell no. Kooky Von Koopa?
Yeah, and Wendy O was Cootie Pie. So it was pretty bad. You know, the animation looked a little better, but, you know, no, it was just not that good.
Well, then let's wrap this cartoon conversation up with you telling us about Super Mario World.
Well, Super Mario World takes place in Dinosaur Land, where there's just a bunch of cave people. Because for some reason, like, cave people were, like, really big in the 90s. Do you remember that?
Oh, heck yeah.
Like, DuckTales.
We could literally do a whole episode about video games, about cavemen.
Well, and I mean, in cartoons, too, there was, like, the Cave Duck in DuckTales, which was he in the game? I know he was
well,
in...
Well, dude, there's literally Encino Man the movie. I mean, we yeah. get it.
Yeah, so for some reason, you know, cavemen, Geico commercial. Anyway, so for some reason, cave people were a thing in the 90s. And so it was, like, really just weird. But then, like, you know, like, there would be, like, they'd have, like, television and stuff. I don't know. And then this is the one that had the infamous Mama Luigi episode where it was actually notably the last episode where Luigi tells Yoshi a bedtime story about how he found the Yoshi egg. And he was like, Mama Luigi? Yeah. So I would say that definitely the quality dropped with each adaptation, and we're going to talk a little bit about quality, too, with the film. Just really quickly, a side note that is very region-specific that I was only aware of from, I believe, Phil from Koopa Club brought this to my attention a couple years ago. Down in Southern California, if you grew up during the, like, 1989, 1990 time in Southern California, there was King Koopa's Cool Cartoons, which had a guy dressed as King Koopa, and the kids would all have, like, these Koopa helmets on. And the thing is that they weren't Mario cartoons, though. They were just, like, these old, like, cartoons that were in the public domain. Kind of like, I think that's what they did on Pee-wee's Playhouse as well. So, basically, it was just, like, this guy is King Koopa. But the kids were like, oh, yeah, King Koopa! And they would give away, like, power gloves and stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, in 1990, the program was actually nominated as the best youth program in the Los Angeles area local Emmy Awards.
Aw. So if you were growing up at that time and you remember watching King Koopa's Cool Cartoons, we'd love to hear your story.
Yeah, you know, there are images about it online. YouTube has a couple of clips about it. It looks like some crazy stuff to me.
Yeah.
And by all accounts, you know, they did a lot of, like, Nintendo promotional giveaways. So, like, this must have on some level been done in association with Nintendo, which to me, it just... is baffling and amazing. Again, like Saigi said, though, crazy enough, none of the actual Mario cartoons were ever shown. It was almost entirely just old public domain cartoons.
And, like, I mean, I don't know, like, I seem just to remember, like, weird stuff like that. I lived briefly in Southern California, not early enough to see King Koopa's Cool Cartoons, but I remember there was, like, a Southern California only, like, show where, like, these kids would, like, run around Disneyland and stuff, and I was like, I want to be on that.
That's awesome. I wish we had more of that kind of stuff in the Bay Area, I tell you.
They're like, let's go to the Pepsi company.
Ah! All right, well, you know, we've sort of saved the best for last.
Oh, did we?
And this is the 1993 American science fiction fantasy adventure action comedy film.
Is that what
Super
it is?
Mario Brothers.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. So, you've probably, you know, we've talked about this movie here on the show before. You've probably seen this movie before. You know, you have Bob Hoskins as Mario.
Yeah, I mean, Bob Hoskins was
John,
like,
Leguizamo as Luigi.
John Leguizamo was an uncomfortably sexy Luigi.
Dennis Hopper as King Koopa. And Samantha Mathis as Princess Daisy.
Yeah, so, like, these were, like, legit actors and actresses. Like,
yeah, yeah, all of these are you know, at least have been A-listers at some point. You know, they might not all have been at the time this movie was made,
yeah,
but they,
I mean,
all had
kind of
those phases in their
was
career.
Was earlier in John Leguizamo's career, but, you know, Bob Hoskins coming off of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, you know, like, probably one of his most famous roles.
So, but, you know, you have obviously Dennis Hopper, who, you know, if you're, like, a Hollywood person, obviously, like, fucking easy writer. So,
right?
I mean, you know, he's, you know, and this was a pre-Waterworld Dennis Hopper.
Yes.
So, and, you know,
It was not the worst film Dennis Hopper was ever involved
in. That is a good point. You know, and Samantha Mathis, you know, for a minute, it looked like she was going to be, like, one of the next big starlets.
Like the A-list lady.
Well, yeah, you know, because she, you know, was in Pump Up the Volume. She was in Little Women. She was in American President. You know, obviously, she went on to a career of, you know, Atlas Shrugged. But, you know, at the time, it seemed like she was going to be a big deal. So it was really interesting, you know, that they had gotten all of this talent to produce this movie.
And they really tried.
They did. Why don't you talk about it a little?
So, like, this is a movie that is famous for its multiple script revisions. Some of them were a lot more serious in tone. Some of them took the sci-fi elements, like, way to the extreme. And if you do a little bit of Googling, you can find, like, old versions of scripts out there.
Yeah.
So basically it was very, like, the thing is that it's weird because it wasn't really, like, meant for kids. I don't know if they were trying to reach, like, an all ages, but it was very almost, I don't want to say avant-garde, but, you know, basically the Mushroom Kingdom was kind of like this dystopian dino dimension. And then, like, a lot of, like, characters and villains were a lot more humanoid. Toad was just like this, kind of like street musician who, like, was nothing like Toad. Big Bertha, the fish, was a lounge singer who was like, oh yeah. And then, like, I don't even remember, Iggy and Spike, were they kind of like dino fight a little bit?
Yes.
And then, like, you know, if you've ever seen Dennis Hopper in his Koopa attire, you know, it was definitely, I mean, if you're familiar with the Dragon Ball evolution, this is kind of the Dragon Ball evolution of the Super Mario Brothers franchise.
So, well, and you know, it's funny because Miyamoto-san about the movie has said, you know, that to this day, he feels that, you know, a lot of effort was put into the movie. He personally viewed it as, like, a fun project, but he actually felt that basically the people trying to make the movie tried too hard to make a game or to make a movie about what the Mario games were, and as a result, they failed to make an interesting movie. And I think that's a really interesting perspective, because you look at Dennis Hopper in this silly King Koopa makeup and that weird hair cap that he's wearing, and it's just like, you know, this clearly misses the point completely.
Yeah, basically, like, King Koopa was trying to take over Manhattan and turn it into Dino Hatton.
Like, they tried so hard not to have a man in a lizard costume that they ended up doing something worse. And that's basically Super Mario Brothers, the movie, writ large.
Basically, Luigi's way younger and kind of sexy. I seem to remember there's, like, a desert scene where John Leguizamo is not wearing a shirt, and I'm like, ooh, Luigi, you shouldn't be looking that good, because, you know, it's, oh, Luigi.
And, you know, something really funny about this movie is that Leguizamo and Bob Hoskins would both frequently, like, meet up before filming and just get completely blotto drunk.
They both thought it was, like, the worst thing that they ever did, basically.
Yeah, they both knew that the movie was going to be awful. The only way they could get through it was by being hammered. But something that's funny, you know, Leguizamo talked very badly about this movie in his autobiography a few years ago. But more recently, you know, he has talked about how he feels like he owes a lot to the movie, that it's what, you know, in a lot of ways sort of increased his profile. So, you know, it's not all bad on the Mario Brothers, the movie front.
Yeah, except for Bob Hoskins, who was once asked by The Guardian, what is the worst job you've ever done? What has been your biggest disappointment? And if you could edit something from your past, what would you change? And the answer was Super Mario Brothers for all three. But still, you know, to the point where, you know, despite the movie being a total shit show, you know, we still had a soft spot for Bob Hoskins. You know, definitely a much more gruff Mario than Captain Lou Albano's Mario, who's very playful. And also, Bob Hoskins having just very recently passed, and, you know, and a lot of people being like, oh, even though Mario Brothers was terrible, we're going to watch it in honor of him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I love watching bad movies.
A little bit of tidbit that I hadn't realized until very recently when researching this episode. The original person that they approached to play Mario was Danny DeVito.
Yeah, you know, they also spoke with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And at one point, they were trying to get Tom Hanks in to the movie as Mario.
Been weird. He would have been like, "Hi, I'm Mario."
Amusingly, and you have to consider when this movie was made, but amusingly, they thought Bob Hoskins would be a more profitable choice than Tom Hanks. So
yeah,
that's a thing that happened.
This is one of Daisy's notable appearances. She, in this world, is a NYU student who's also an orphan and an archaeologist who's trying to find dino bones under the Brooklyn Bridge.
I sometimes, for lols, like to pretend that this movie failed because Daisy was in it, and that's why they don't give Daisy roles in games, because this is what happens when you put Daisy in something.
Hi, I'm Daisy. But, you know, like we said, Samantha Mathis, you know, she did her best. Yeah, the actors like didn't really do that bad. It's just that like there was a lot of confusion about what this movie was trying to be. And yeah, it was just it tried, but like this is a large reason.
It tried to say goodbye and it choked.
Yeah, it's largely part of the reason we have not seen any sort of real adaptations cinematically of Mario.
So do you want to talk about that seal of quality now? Because you have this whole episode been like,
well, yeah, because
I'm going to talk about the seal of quality.
Despite,
get it, girl.
Despite Miyamoto-san's kind words, you know, after, you know, that and, you know, kind of also tying back into the Philips CDI, you know, Nintendo really tightly controlled. They stopped production on a Metroid film, and you know, we've even heard like the rumors about the Zelda Netflix series that never happened. So, you know, definitely kind of really in terms of the cinematic output of Mario or really anything Nintendo, largely kind of what this was the end of that. But you know, we've seen Bowser appeared in Wreck-It Ralph. Mario is due to appear in Wreck-It Ralph 2, which hopefully will come out someday because, you know, they're making a bunch of Frozen sequels, GDI. And it's not that Mario is just like not anywhere at all.
Yeah. You know, obviously you would think that this would have impacted video games coming to the theater a little bit differently than it has, but it's hard not to look at some of these video game movies. And, you know, we did a whole episode on video game movies. We're not going to talk about this too long. But you would think that if you're making a video game movie, you would watch Super Mario Brothers and be like, we have to be better than that.
And then Mortal Kombat happened.
Mortal Kombat compared to Super Mario Brothers is a masterpiece. How dare you?
Like, I have to say, Mortal Kombat the movie is bad, but it's fun bad.
The thing is, Mortal Kombat the movie is bad in 2015. But I think, when was the first time you saw Mortal Kombat the movie, honestly?
Like, whenever we recorded that episode?
Yeah, so 2014. Yeah, by 2014 standards, Mortal Kombat is a pretty bad movie. 20 years ago, when it was made, it was actually pretty good. Like, as Kung Fu movies go, 20 years ago, Mortal Kombat was not a bad film at all.
Yeah.
That's a huge part of why Mortal Kombat blew up the way it did.
So, but yeah.
But, you know, you see stuff like the Max Payne movie. We saw the Double Dragon movie.
And we still got, like, Assassin's Creed coming.
Well, I can't speak to Assassin's Creed because it's not out yet. But a lot of these movies.
Prince of Persia.
I wouldn't say Prince of Persia is on the same level of flop as Super Mario.
Just that Super Mario was the first time that a video game was optioned
for
a movie.
You are totally right there. I was trying to make the parallel that you would think that producers would take the memo, that you'd see what went wrong with Super Mario Brothers, because so much of Super Mario Brothers that went wrong really ultimately came down to the fact that they took the wrong approach, like Miyamoto-san said. And, you know, unfortunately, it's like no one is really taking that memo. Aside, you look at someone like Mortal Kombat, who, you know, they didn't say, oh, we can't have a giant man with a ponytail and four arms. No, they just were like, fuck it, we're going to do Goro and he'll be claymation and you're going to like it. And I think that audiences, you can really tell the difference in how the movies came about from how audiences responded to Mortal Kombat compared to Super Mario Brothers. I'm sorry, you can make your point now.
Oh, no, just that, you know, in terms of that cultural impact, paving the way from such varied things as, you know, The Prince of Persia, which, you know, a lot of people felt was kind of misguided, but overall was, you know, a fun Jake Gyllenhaal action romp, looking steadily as the prince. And then also, you know, I would say, like, even something like Pixels was the result of, you know, Mario coming to the the big screen.
Okay, well, now I'm not happy about Mario Brothers the movie at all anymore. Jeez. Pixels? Why would you make that connection?
Pixels is probably what happened when Adam Sandler watches Super Mario Brothers. He's like, I'm going to do that and make a bunch of dick jokes. Because that's Adam Sandler.
Yeah, to be fair. All right.
Hey, well, at least Adam Sandler wasn't involved in the Super Mario Brothers film.
Yeah, right? Well, let's start wrapping this up. I want to talk a little bit about how Mario and Mario Mania impacted other games. And this is a little more nebulous of a topic, Slaggy. I know this is more of an independent thought, but I'd really like to hear your opinion of how Mario, specifically how Mario blew up in pop culture, which this ties into what you were just talking about. How did Mario's ascent into pop culture figurehead affect other game series?
I mean, you know, really, the whole idea of the 90s platformer, mascot platformer, with, I mean, of course, Sonic, but also then you have things like Bubsy the Bobcat, Aero the Acrobat, and, just, you know, just all of these mascot platformers, Crash Bandicoot, you know, really just paved the way for that being something that was really, you know, they tried to make it marketable, in some cases working better than others. But, you know, also just really opening up the audience for gameplay. I mean, you know, Mario was so popular that, you know, people who, even back then, like kind of like what we see with the Wii and Wii U, were like, oh, I don't really consider myself a gamer. But, you know, they would have an NES and Super Mario Brothers. So, you know, I would even just say, like, opening up the scope of, like, the audience of gaming from being, you know, a very core thing. Mario was always kind of been that entry point for people to be like, oh, it's Mario, I recognize him, you know, and so like, oh, this is fun, Nintendo, Mario.
Oh, this is Candy, we're having
oh,
fun.
Oh, this is Mario, we're having fun.
And, you know, for me, you know, it's I look at Mario Brothers and Mario as a character, and you look and you see so many properties, especially from that era, and even today, basically try to take that same Mario method to mega stardom. You have, you know, even Angry Birds doing cartoons and movies and t-shirts and gummy fruit snacks. You have, you know, dating back to Sonic. We talked about Sonic, very similar trajectory from Mario. Just Sega did not control the brand, did not get in front of that quality control that Nintendo ultimately did get on when Slaggy, you know,
right,
goes off on his rant about the Nintendo seal of quality.
Except
that for Sonic. And that's why, you know, Sonic for a second really could have been bigger than Mario.
Well, yeah, that's why there's a big, well, I mean, not big, but there's a group of us who are big Saturday morning Sonic cartoon fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where my Sat AM peeps at, what? And also the comics, which are still running,
yeah,
I guess.
Even today, there are still Sonic comic books, and I would say that those Sonic comic books are doing more for the brand than the games at this point.
They always were. That's what Sat AM was based off of. But
I wouldn't say they always were. Okay, Sonic 2 and Sonic 3 were made completely separate from that.
Oh, no, I mean in terms of, like, cartoons and stuff, though.
Well, I really meant overall. I think that Sonic comics are doing more for Sonic as a franchise than something like Sonic Boom for Wii U.
Yeah.
Or even Sonic Lost Worlds, though I think that's a shame because I think Sonic Lost Worlds is an underappreciated gem. You know, it's the thing is, Mario really wrote the blueprint on how to become like a next level pop culture icon. And it's funny to see so many other video game properties and companies try to follow that blueprint, but like rush it or short shrift it, maybe, you know, not spend the amount of money and time managing the brand that Nintendo put in. But if you think about it, we're at this point that we are now having this conversation because Nintendo has really controlled this brand and very carefully worked this brand for more than 30 years. You know, we talk about how Super Mario Brothers is 30 years old now, but Mario is really a little older than that. You look at, you know, the original Mario Brothers game, for example.
Donkey Kong.
And Donkey Kong.
Jumpman.
Jumpman. And you really have Nintendo managing this property so expertly that even on the Wii U, you have, you know, Mario Kart selling 5 million units or some nonsense.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's kind of neat to look back at Miyamoto-san's original goal for, you know, he had wanted Mario to just kind of be like I mean, well, he you know, he'd wanted him to be kind of like a placeholder character, but he became so much more than that.
And, you know, it's funny because I just realized, you know, I missed a vital point. On this blueprint, you know, other companies follow. One of the main things Nintendo did for Mario was start making these spin-off games. And I know some people get tired of the Mario aesthetic and then they start like, oh, another Mario game. But like, dude, Mario Kart is like the forefront of mascot racing games.
Yep.
And obviously, you know, mascot racing games are a thing. You have, you know, the Sonic All-Stars Sega Racing with Danica
Transformed,
Patrick.
Yeah.
Transformed. You have, obviously, you know, there was the whole Crash Kart Racing.
Oh, yeah.
There have even been Final Fantasy Kart Racers.
Yeah, there was.
So, you know, it's Jak and Daxter had a kart racing game. I mean, this has been like a whole thing.
When Mario does it, people want to do it, too.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, we have these sports games. And just Nintendo has done everything right. They wrote the blueprint, and it's something that to this day we see other companies aspire to with their intellectual properties.
Indeed.
So unless you have anything else to say about that aspect, Slaggy, I think I want to get forward to the rest of this show, and hopefully you'll join me in hoping for another 30 wonderful years with Mario.
Indeed.
All right, well then, Slaggy, I think it's time to talk about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
So this week I have been playing a handful of games. The big one, of course, is Super Mario Maker. I have been putting a lot of time into Super Mario Maker, having a ton of fun making stages, playing stages that a lot of my online friends have made, including a lot of you lovely and beautiful listeners. Just seeing tons and tons and tons of great original content, really thoughtful level designs. And I have to say, I'm really impressed with the quality of a lot of the user-made stages. I know there were some worries before release that it was just going to be a shit show full of junky levels. Maybe I have really great friends and our listeners are just amazing, but more often than not, by far, like I'd say 98% of the time, I'm like, that was great, dude. Like, there were some really core ideas here that were just fantastic. Slaggy, have you played a lot of Mario Maker?
Yeah, I've been sucked in. I've been playing every day, whether that's, you know, playing other players' levels, like, you know, particularly focusing on our listeners' levels. Which, like I said, you know, I love Game Booey listeners because they, like, you know, it's clear why they listen to us. They understand, you know, what makes games tick because some of these levels are so good. Lil Daddy's Pizza has done some things visually, like with just like backdrops and stuff.
Special shout out to him, man.
Yeah,
those are some of the best stages I've seen in all of Super Mario Maker. He also has the highest number of stars of anyone on my friends list, and he deserves every single damn one of them.
Yeah, like really,
if I could, I would give him like all the stars. I'd just put them on a platter and be like, here you go, man, you deserve this.
Yeah, but I mean, just really, really cool to see, you know, all of the different ideas and stuff that, like, you know, I wouldn't be able to do. But then, you know, I've got to say, most of my time's been spending playing around in the Mario Maker itself, and, you know, just, I love it. I mean, I didn't realize how much I needed a game like this.
And yeah, absolutely.
I think that it's actually helped me really, in a way, become more skilled at playing, you know, the 2D Marios, like, just the way of you having to beat your own level and, you know, testing stuff out and timing stuff. You know, it definitely kind of forces you to think about, you know, how the levels are designed, and it, like, helps you understand Nintendo's level design better.
Excellent, yeah. And I have to say, you know, I'm talking here mostly about playing Mario Maker, but I've also been really enjoying creating in Mario Maker. You know, it's just a lot of fun to make stages. Like you were saying, you know, gain insight on how Mario stages are designed. I talk about game design here a lot on the show, and I have learned that all I know is that I don't know nothing. Okay? I do my best to make stages that are interesting and cool, and then every time, like, I'll see someone play through one of them, one of my IRL friends or something, play through one of my stages, and it's like, oh man, I didn't even realize that if you don't know to always be holding the run button, if you're not the kind of player who is always holding the run button like I am, if you don't know there is a run button like many people apparently don't, then, you know, some of these levels are unbeatable. unbeatable, and it's just such a fascinating eye-opening experience to see new players play my stages. And some of the fundamental things about game design that I take for granted are just to many people like advanced play mechanics that to me are like, dude, no, this is as normal to me as breathing oxygen. Like, to some people is like, this is expert level shit. So it's been really humbling and really amazing and honestly really cool just to sort of learn about game design and level design and to see things thrown into this relief.
Yeah, so the only thing I can have to say is that I just want more features, like, not like in a QQ way. I'm having so much fun that I'm like, oh, I wish there was like desert and angry sun, or that I could put like little waters, I could put slopes. Like, I feel like a lot from Mario 3, but also, you know, there's like, you know, definitely things from World that, you know, are sorely missed, but like particularly from 3 that I'm just like, you know, the little like mini Goomba fleas inside of the jumping blocks, Spike, the little guy who throws spiky balls. No relation to you, but
excuse me, lots of relation.
Oh, tell me more about your spiky balls.
No, keep going.
No, just that it really achieves its goal of inspiring creativity. And I mean, to the point where I'm like, oh, is there anything out there like this that, you know, I could take the next step to try and make a platform game of my own?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I really, you know, I was initially kind of like disagreeing. I saw a lot of people saying they thought Super Mario Maker was going to get people into like game design and level design and making content for games. And I was very skeptical, but I'm not as skeptical anymore because I myself have started to have these thoughts. And I've seen a lot of people communicating like, hey, I really like this. What tools are there to sort of go to the next level with this? Because I think I like this a lot. And I think that is so amazing and so cool. And once again, so Nintendo to have made a game around making games and have the very act of creation be a fun reward in and of itself.
Yeah, and then some of the things that, like, people are doing, like, trying to, like, add a little sense of narrative into it, or, you know, like, I made one that was just kind of, like, a David Lynch-inspired level. It's just very disturbing. Like, just some of the things that people are doing with it that, you know, Nintendo, like, never maybe would have thought to have done with these tools. And of course, you know, there's kind of the double-edged sword of the autoplay levels, which on some hand it's like, you know, that's, it's just like a fancy Rube Goldberg device, but on the other hand, the level of intricacy that it takes to make that is like really impressive. So you know, just seeing how people are using this tool is like, you know, there's been some negative feedback in the reviews about it, but I'm really like, you know, it's astonishingly, I mean, it's like, it's so appropriate that this is the next, what's opening up the next chapter of Mario's legacy.
Absolutely. Let's see. I've also spent a lot of time this week playing Destiny, The Taken King. I'm really enjoying this. You know, pretty much every change that has been made to the game has been a positive change. All of the new content is fantastic. A lot of people had complained about older Destiny, how like the levels were very sterile. There wasn't a lot going on. It all felt very canned. That is no longer the case in The Taken King. Things feel more like a Halo style of mission design, where there are cinemas and cutscenes, but more importantly than that, like, it's like you're coming into a world that has existed already before you came into it. You'll walk into an elevator shaft as like the sort of, you can see things like falling around you. It just, the environment feels more alive, and it really amplifies the game experience and narrative so much. A lot of the core mechanic changes are fantastic. The new subclasses that I've played with so far have been really good. Just all across the board, it has really elevated Destiny, I would say. I also played a lot of Picross and Gargoyle's Quest 2, both on my 3DS. I was out of town for a big chunk of time in between this episode and last episode. Took my trusty 3DS with me, though, and as always, you know, Picross and NES gaming got me through the week in no time at all. So, like, what about you? What have you been playing?
You know, Mario Maker honestly just sucked up all of my time lately, but I did get from my family the, even though I already have a new 3DS, you know, they were thoughtful and got me the Animal Crossing 3DS, and I ain't gonna complain about having a little new 3DS, you know, with the Famicom colored buttons, so I, I'm looking forward to putting some time into Happy Home Designer. So, like, LOL casual gamer.
Something that just happened in the last 4 minutes that is super interesting in the world of gaming. And sorry to break up our usual flow. We are about to head into our shout-outs and social links and stuff. But USA Today just uploaded an interview with the lead designer of Rock Band 4, who explicitly discussed how excited they were to have U2 in the Rock Band franchise for the first time. This interview, which can be viewed on YouTube as of a few minutes ago, even includes gameplay of the song in question, which is I Will Follow.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, they have that song as well as a lot, quote-unquote, a lot more DLC coming later in the year.
Oh, yes.
Oh, snap.
Man, we still don't know the full set list for that, so...
No, we do. It has been announced.
It has?
Yeah, yeah.
Did I miss that? Announced.
Yes, you did. It was weeks ago, man. So, let's move forward, though. We got that news in. Had to... co-opt everything. Now let's get back to the social links I think we were about to get into.
Yes. Our social links question of the week was, this week, we're looking at Mario's impact on popular culture. What's your favorite appearance of his outside the Mushroom Kingdom? Over on Twitter, we had Crystal Idea saying, Dr. Mario, spent many, many hours playing that game. Yes, I own Dr. Luigi too. I'm not surprised. That girl loves her puzzle game. Over on Facebook, we heard from other half of the super couple, Dan Diaz, saying there's always a special place in my heart for Lou Albano and the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. The wizard featuring SMB3 was so bad. I have a feeling he doesn't mean like the power glove. Last but not least, Super Mario bars, the ice cream bars with the gumball nose. Aw, I totally forgot about like video game ice cream bars, especially like the Sonic ones. Sometimes you see them online with like melted faces. It's like Sonic.
Ah, right. And those eyeballs you can like use as BBs in a BB gun.
Francisco Yu saying, I always love the Super Mario Brothers movie from the 90s. Fuck all the haters. That movie is the shit. Also, can we bring back the Mario sodas? I remember loving the Luigi Berry one.
Dude, those sodas were so good.
I don't remember them.
Oh, they were so good. Anytime my mom would
never
go to...
let me drink soda.
Ah, that's hilarious. Yeah, no, anytime I'd go to, like, Costco or Price Club, it would be like, Mom, can we get the Mario soda? And she'd say no, and I'd get it anyway.
What else did they have besides Luigi Berry, do you remember?
You know, I don't remember the flavors. I just remember there was a Mario and a Yoshi and a Bowser and a Luigi.
Oh, wow.
And they were all different flavors, and I think Mario was cola. That's the one I remember. I think Mario was cola.
Oh, just like a traditional Coke or Pepsi?
Yeah, I think it was like more of like a Hansen style drink though. It was not like soda pop as much. But whatever, keep on moving.
All right, we've also got a handful of tweets to catch up on in regards to episode 92, World of Mario. Twitter user that retro code said, "This is a must. Listen to this amazing episode and hear how they break it down." Oh, thank you. Your enzyme had said, Anime Buoy and Game Buoy, it's a 2-for-1 Monday. Celebrate. We had put out 2 episodes at the same time as we are doing now. So please look forward to that if you haven't already heard our Anime Buoy episode that is up concurrently. Your enzyme also saying, still bad-mouthing Yoshi. Am I the only one who loves him? No, I
You're
like
not
Yoshi.
The only one who loves Yoshi, the character.
Oh, I'm sorry. He says, am I the only one who loves it? Meaning Yoshi, the puzzle game.
Yeah, no, you are the only one that loves that game. I'm sorry.
I played it.
Ah, shady lady.
Happy Natto said, I didn't think the show could get better, but Slack Kick Scene Spice Girls made it possible. Hey, bae. Charu Cola Zero, saying, finally listen to the GameBuoy.org podcast. Spike Point and Slack Kick have such lovely voices. Oh, gosh, I'm blushing.
Aww, you were way too kind,
oh, hey,
man.
DJ
Thank
saying,
you so much.
These are facts. Oh, girl.
Y'all way too kind.
We have Braun Dwarf kind of touching in on Tokyo Game Show saying, after TGS, it seems that Idea Factory, Gust, and Compile Heart will no longer be the sole JRPG dealers, right? We also had Sparky916 on Twitter was talking with you about VB Wario Land and saying, review after review, video after video, I've pined after it for years. This fantasy needs to become a reality. So yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, a lot of these, the few Virtual Boy gems, very obscure to a lot. So... thank you for all the wonderful feedback. We love your feedback. We like your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. We love when you check us out over on Stitcher Radio, which is a great place to listen to podcasts. We love your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter.
Yeah, we effing love Twitter.
If you want to ever email us at any time, you can do that at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And, of course, all our social links, all of our... complete episode archive and whatsoever is over on GameBuoy.org.
You can find our everything over on GameBuoy.org.
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 So Mario Month and everything before that and to be. Captain Spike, without our lovely friends in the podcasting scene, we wouldn't be doing this. So who do you have to shout out to?
Well, as ever and always, my first shout out goes to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. I'd be remiss not to mention Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as their sister show Enos Lives, looking at your favorite PlayStation 1 classics one game at a time. You should also check out the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as their sister show X Nation over at culturalwormhole.blogspot.com, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I also implore you to check out Slagkick's side project, Reading is Fundamental, where he and a panel of friends talk about RuPaul's Drag Race when it is in season. This panel of friends, of course, is myself, Rob Roberts from VG Realness, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness. And last but never ever least, we got two more here. The first is Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, the Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail, as well as Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. Slaggy, a game bar. I want you to take us there.
Well, I'm going to take you on down to the Gay Video Game Prairie Home Companion, where you're just going to have a gay old time with the Hunty Bunch. Also part of the Hunty Bunch is Koopa Club, the award-winning and now seasonal podcast about Nintendo with an LGBT twist and a boatload of fun. Award was from their mothers. Very prestigious. I'd also like to welcome Joystick Jockeys to the Hunty Bunch fold. That's featuring DJ and Ruben, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them.
The Q stands for cuties.
Well, also queer or questioning, but yes, in this case, cuties as well. And La Palanca Podcast, podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. I'd also like to shout out to the Voice of Geeks Network. You can find so many great shows over there. You know, Rob Roberts, one of the main figureheads over there. And, you know, if you're still playing World of Warcraft, you should check out Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Awesome. Our theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated. That was the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound, not unlike the Zelda Hyrule Symphony that you may see touring around. They closed their doors a while back, but will forever be pouring out a fury into the Great Fairy Fountain for them.
All right, my lovely and beautiful listeners, it has been a sincere pleasure to speak to you guys this lovely Sunday afternoon. Hopefully you have had as much fun listening as we've had talking. Until next time, though, keep gaming, keep thinking, and
swing your arms from side to side. Come on, it's time to go do the Mario. Take one step, and then again, let's do the Mario all together now. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Just like that.
Close the world. Open the next. Cat, I'm a kitty cat, and a meow, 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 and a meow, meow, meow.
Speaking to your mic.
Speaking to my mic.
Let it go, let it go.
Swing your arms from side to side. Come on, it's time to go do the Mario. Take one step, and then again, let's do the Mario all together now. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Just like that.